Hey everybody, thank you for being here. I've got a special episode for you today. I don't want to come across like a ranty stick in the mud, but I want you guys to be free of all the intellectual crap and lies and superstition that seem to follow the tarot everywhere. And it really started with Itea, Levi, and Djebelin, and these are the founders of modern tarot esoteric thought. And for the most part, they tried. You know, it's not like they were full-on charlatans. But a lot of what they've preached and proselytized has been totally disproven. But it just won't go away. People want to cling to it. This is fundamentalism. And fundamentalism, or the belief that if it's old, it's good, or if it's older, it's better, that has no place in the tarot. The tarot is cool enough and it works well enough to where we don't have to believe lies just to make it work. As a matter of fact, if we free ourselves from the belief, the erroneous beliefs, it actually works a lot better. And that's what I'm trying to do, is get you guys to a point where you can get more information. By the way, I apologize for the background noise. I'll try to fix that next time around. Now, Egypt, Atlantis, Rome, these are all old civilizations. You know, older is better, older is cooler. I love all that old stuff. But it doesn't mean that they are better. I mean, their lifespan, expected lifespan was 20, 30, 40 years, you know, instead of 60, 70, 80, even 100 years now. We didn't have modern medicine. We had a lot of superstitious beliefs. And, you know, we thought the world was flat. We thought the world was the center of the universe and the center of the solar system. So some things we had right, some things we didn't. We learn as we progress. So all I'm saying with this is that just because it's older doesn't mean it was better or that it was right. We lost some things along the way. We've learned a lot more. What I want you to do with the tarot is take the good and take all the crap and just put it out in the pile. You know, burn it. Let some other idiot deal with all the lies and hokum and superstition. And you just play with the cards, have a good time, believe what you will, but base it in fact at least, please. And then your readings will be a lot more powerful. You will get a lot more detail. And when you go to manifest things, because that's kind of what the whole point of the tarot is, you can create reality to fit your needs. And you can do this without all the hokum and superstition, and get infinitely better results. So we're just going to jump right into this. The essence of today's lesson is that the art of a particular deck changes the meaning of the card. Therefore, it disrupts the balance of the tarot. The pretty standard definitions of the tarot are handed down to us by the Rider-Waite deck. Crowley did a variation of the deck. He didn't completely reinvent the tarot, but he kind of went off on his own way and said, I disagree with this, therefore I'm going to go in a different direction. Kept a lot of the same stuff and then moved things in a way that he liked. But for the most part, and even including his deck, most tarot decks pretty much just rely on basic standard Rider-Waite definitions. And then when a deck like the Robin Wood, Hanson Roberts, Druidcraft, Deviant Moon Alchemical, I mean all these popular decks, they will change the balance of the cards. And that's what we're going to discuss today. Before that, though, I want to give you a little background to show you why I'm talking about this and how you can verify this for yourself, because we've seen it throughout history. Itea's hanged man, was actually, he changed it to prudence. He turned the hanged man upside down, changed it into a woman, lifting her skirt to avoid a snake. Or in another one, it was a man standing on the ground with a rope around his ankle. Well, that's not neither one of those is hanging, but he desperately wanted to work in the four cardinal virtues, four Christian cardinal virtues, and he was missing prudence. So he looked at the hangman and fought with it, and he said, if I turn it upside down, I have prudence, because it would be a prudent thing to avoid the snake. And that's how we twist the logic and just screw up the tarot, and it means what we want it to mean. Who cares if it's right or not? And that's what Atea did. So that's kind of made some people angry, and other people are like, I must follow Atea, no matter what. You know, how dare you question the tarot? Levi. Woof, how much time do we have going about him? Levi created a whole new deity out of thin air. Just made it up. Didn't exist before. When he created the goat god and claimed that witches worshipped this. The problem with the goat god is that, A, the goat itself is Hebraic, not pagan. And witches are not a singular group like Catholics or Protestants or Muslims who all have the same exact beliefs and all worship the same god. Witches is a catch-all term for those who follow predominantly a nature-based religion. Witches can include people from tribes from Africa, tribes from Scotland, or Scotland, Ireland, you know, the island. We call them the Celts or the Druids at that point. The Celts and the Gauls from Europe. We have the term witches is very loose and can mean anybody, of a large group, and some of them are polytheistic, many gods. Some of them are dual theistic, god and goddess. Some of them are dual theistic and polytheistic. So to say that there's just one god that witches worship, that's what got us in trouble, where certain aspects of the Christian church pointed to that and said, this is proof that witches worship the devil, which is not even close. They don't even believe in the Christian devil. It's just like, I don't believe that Jews generally believe in Jesus as a savior, hence the whole, Judaism versus Christianity. Is like, it's just a different way of accessing divinity. So we need to allow for that. Now, what I want to point at is that we're looking back in time, and we're looking at other people's belief systems when we're looking at the images. And Atea, Levi, Djeblin, they tried the whole Einstein thing, the grand unification theory, and they failed. And we have to commend them for their search for information. But the fact that they had to make everything fit in the box of their choosing, that's a very cardinal energy thing to do. That's a very, this must fit it my way, and all of you have to believe what I say. And that never works. Just take a look through history. So what we need to do is we need to look at the cards, whether we're looking at the Tarot of Marseille or one of the more modern decks or even an Oracle deck, and see what those cards say to us, because no one carries a sword around anymore. We can't look at that and say, nobility, that makes sense, because we've disproved nobility a long time ago. Nobility meaning monarchy. I mean, if someone insults your honor, you don't meet them at dawn and fight them out in a duel to the death with pistols or swords. It just doesn't happen. So if the cards show, somebody beating somebody with a sword, we have to translate that into, that looks like their lawyers are going to come at you with guns blazing. Again, not necessarily physically bam bam, like a Quentin Tarantino movie, but more like lawsuits, subpoenas, verdicts, disturbance, all that paperwork stuff that I don't know. We're translating it, and that's okay, because the gods are speaking to us through a symbolic language. The symbolism allows for a multitude of meanings rather than individual words. So therefore, 78 cards can mean thousands of different things, because as we've talked about in previous podcasts and in future ones, of course, each card has to pull double duty. Each card has to have a variety of meanings, and your ability to know which meaning is correct at this point in time for this particular aspect, for this particular answer, that's what makes you a good reader. And of course, we've covered that, and we'll cover that again. So don't worry too much about it. But we don't have kings and queens who've been ordained by some church as being better or more important than everyone else simply because they got a lot of money. So we need to translate that. A king or a queen is really just a man or a woman, and the suits tell us what the personality types are. You know, is it an air sign? Is it an intellectual? Or, you know, could we say that the king of swords is someone stern and dour? Versus, let's say, the king of wands, who's, you know, very active, adventure-oriented, maybe a fire sign. What's next? Give me a moment here. I apologize for this. I normally like having a guest because it just makes it a lot easier for me to sit and talk conversationally. I do most of the talking, but as I get more educated guests on, then we can share a conversation because we can bounce back and forth. With my students, I tend to lead them along and then ask for their input. But as they learn, I will have them more and more. We'll have different input in. All right. So, tell you what, I'm just going to move past all of these notes that I had, and I want to jump right into the decks. If you happen to have a Robin Wood tarot deck, a Hanson Roberts tarot deck, or the Druidcraft, that's what we're going to be examining today. And all of these are going to be in comparison to the Rider-Waite or the pseudo-standard version of what we expect the tarot to be. So, for example, I'm going to start here with the Robin Wood deck, because it's pretty popular. And I'm going to do cups, then coins, wands, swords, and only a few cards. We're not going to go through the entire deck. But what I want to do is point out how some of these cards differ vastly from what you'll see in the Rider-Waite. And therefore, whatever deck you're using, as long as you can read with it and get good answers, it's valid. Don't let anybody tell you differently, or that this deck is better than that deck. The validity of a deck is how well does it work for you. But the artwork will change the meaning. For example, here in the Seven of Cups in the Robin Wood deck, we have a girl whose head is literally in the clouds. Her hair becomes a big giant cloud. And this kind of indicates that she's daydreaming or that she's being very creative, whereas in the Rider-Waite or the Rider-Waite variants, we have the silhouette of a man who's jumping back in surprise, like, oh, I've got all these choices ahead of me. If you put the two cards together, you'll be able to see they're completely different. The next one is the Page of Cups. In the Robin Wood decks, Page of Cups, Page of Pentacles, Robin Wood decks, right? Page of Wands, Page of Swords. All of the pages here are girls. Or they look to be like girls. Most of them are. The Page of Wands is a little suspect. But that's okay, because she could be a tomboy. Which, again, there's your information that it's not just a girl, but that she's more of a tomboy, where the Page of Cups is very effeminate and very artistic. And the Page of Swords, she looks very active. But because all the pages are little girls here, I'd say little, they look like they're about 8, maybe 12, I don't know. This changes the gender from the Rider-Waite. Now, Crowley did this, and other decks do this too, where they'll have princesses versus just the automatic assumption of male or masculinity like we have in the Rider-Waite. So when you're reading, your deck will change the information that you're getting. Therefore, rather than having a standard set interpretation that has to apply across each individual deck, this reinforces what I say. We've got to take a look at what's actually on the card. If it's a picture of a girl, here the example, the Page of Wands, who looks like a tomboy, I would say, okay, it's an active female. Let's say between the ages of 5 and 17, you know, pages I like to have in that general area, the queens would be, you know, older. But now we know that this is an active female, and then we could use the knights in this case as boys. In other decks, the earth and water, or feminine signs, are female, and the air and fire, or masculine signs, are male. And again, it's more of look at your deck, find out what works for you. Two of Coins. I want to get through this a little more quickly, sorry. Two of Coins here in the Robin Hood. Here we have someone who's balancing on a tightrope and is holding two coins with the infinity loop there, rather than kind of dancing and juggling. And they're up in the air, and they've got a flying ship. Matter of fact, two flying ships. This is vastly different from the Rider-Waite, where we have the water is or the ocean is tossing, turning, and throwing a boat hither and fro. I'll figure out your planet's language. I apologize. Three of Coins, or Three of Pentacles, here in the Robin Hood deck. It's a master artist working on a feather, but nobody's complaining. Nobody's interrupting his work. So therefore, we still have the master, you know, versus master versus apprentice with the Eight of Coins, but we lose the inference of somebody bothering you, somebody asking for directions, somebody coming to compliment you or commend your work. That all goes away with the Three of Coins. So if you're used to a rote memorization, or saying, this card means this, and then you're reading with somebody else's deck, or you get a brand new deck, and you have the situation where, for example, those people are gone, it's just a close-up of the guy working, then that changes the meaning. The gods are not saying that there's an eruption going on, or that somebody's commending your work. You would need a second card to do that. Let's see. Six of Swords, we've got the... it looks like... oh God, I know I'm going to screw this up, and I apologize. Charon, the Invisible Ferryman. Again, here we have an Invisible Ferryman on a swan boat, and they're going to... they're going across water to a cave with a light on the inside. Presumably, this could be the River Styx. They're going to Hades. They're going to the Underworld. They're going to the Fairyland. That's vastly different from the Rider-Waite, where you have the feeling of a refugee, you know, like the man rowing or poling, pushing off the pole, but a man transferring two people, presumably a woman and a child, maybe his wife and kid. Take a look at your deck and see what images are in the cards. I keep saying that. Please trust me on this. The Devil in this particular card is interesting, in this particular deck in the Robin Hood. You have a treasure chest, and you have a naked lady and a naked man, and there's the light at the end of the tunnel. They could just leave and go off in the tunnel. They could probably even take a few pieces of gold or jewels out and make it out. But she's pulling one way, he's pulling the other, because they want the entire chest, and therefore they've trapped themselves. Well, they've trapped themselves in this hell versus the Rider-Waite, where, you know, the horned god of Levi, who has now been transformed into the Christian devil, is sitting over top of them. So instead of having the evil boss paradigm, now we've got, oh, you've done it to yourself. Okay, real quick, moving on to the Druidcraft deck. I like the Druidcraft Tarot. It's actually a very nicely illustrated deck. But we've got several of these where things have changed. These cards are a little bit more random, so I apologize. We have the Wheel instead of the Wheel of Fortune. Here's a... It's not even a wheel at all. It's a witch completing a circle, or presumably a spell circle. That is vastly different than, you know, the Wheel of Fortune being up and down and up and down. Seven of Pentacles, we have a druid with a golden sickle gathering, it looks like oak moss, but the point is that he's harvesting, again, I'm assuming it's a he based on the structure of his anatomy. He's built like a man. This is different from, I'm standing in the farm and kind of looking at my thing, and this is an actual harvest card. The Seven of Coins in the Rider-Waite is a little bit more, well, I don't know. I mean, it could be, hey, things are going well, and a lot of it could be, why aren't you happy? Look at all that stuff that you have. Five of Pentacles. Again, if you've got this deck, please look at it. She's just unhappy, but she's obviously not homeless. Here's a big one, the Seven of Swords. On the Druidcraft Tarot, the Seven of Swords, we've got our seven swords, and then we've got a man sitting or standing behind a podium, and he's deep in thought. He's got a quill, so he's either figuring out a problem, or he's got writer's block, or he's doing inventory. But this is a man who is engaged in intellectual activity, not a man who's stealing something, not a man who's sneaking into somebody's camp and stealing their swords, as it, the typical Seven of Swords is. So, Nine of Cups, we imply a restaurant. Seven of Cups looks like daydreaming. Five of Cups, I can't make sense of at all, although it is a very nice image. Princess of Wands, again with the gender reversal. What I'm just trying to point out here is that as you go through your deck, you will notice in a very real way that the deck you choose will change the meaning of the cards. Therefore, you cannot rely on a rote memorization, or specifically what Atea, Levi, and DeJevlin said, this is what the card means and you have to believe it, or numerological values. Numerological values work well in cartomancy, standard playing cards, where you have seven diamonds. Okay, that's math. Seven times diamonds, or seven plus diamonds equals this, where seven plus clubs, or seven times clubs equals this. The tarot has pictures on it for a reason. If you have the universal weight, a couple of things real quick here, only two cards. In the Four of Cups, we actually have pupils, or I should say irises. We have eyeballs for the Four of Cups guy. So in the Rider-Waite, he could just be sitting there asleep. He could be being bratty. We don't know. And I like that. I used to hate it. But after a while, I realized this gave me a variety of interpretations. I wasn't stuck with just one meaning. Here, when they corrected the art, well, they forced it now. This man in the Four of Cups in the Universal Waite, he's wide awake, and he's looking off to the side, and he's got his arms folded. This gives, if you're into the whole body, science of body language thing, this kind of implies that he's saying, no, you know, I don't want it, I want chocolate, go away. So that means he's being bratty or refusing this. That limits the number of interpretations. That limits the effectiveness of this card. As much as I like the Universal Waite, I don't want a card to limit my possible interpretations, because that means I give choppy readings. I don't want you guys giving choppy readings. Please trust me on this. Your readings will be fluid, and they will be exact, and they will work nicely if you take the time to do it right, learn to see what's on the card, and listen to the voice inside your head. Well, you know what I mean. One other thing real quick for the Universal Waite, we've got the Queen of Wands. The cat is all pretty and soft and shiny, and in the original, original Rider-Waite, well, in the PCSRW, the Rider-Waite, whether it is Stuart Kaplan called a version, the original Rider-Waite, which is a way of owning that title, when we could say the original Rider-Waite is really the deck that was done in 1909/1910, being the original deck. So in that deck, though, whatever we call it, it's a mangy cat, because the Queen of Wands, Leo, Aries, she is not going to be upstaged by a pretty shiny cat. She likes having a mangy cat. Yeah, mangy cat. Yeah. I'm not saying she's an attention whore, but I'm saying you need to give her the respect due. And if you do that, nobody gets hurt. Real quick, we'll go to the Hanson Roberts, and then I'll wrap this up. If you have the Hanson Roberts, again, take notes on this, please, and or come back to it. This is going to be rather random. The Page of Rods. I really like this. The Page of Rods is the equivalent to the Page of Wands in the Rider-Waite. If you get a chance, if you don't have it, look it up online. Here, the Page of Rods is a page, and he's a young boy, again, masculine, and he's holding his hand up to the side, or he's holding his palm up to the side of his face, as if he's calling out. Now, this follows the meaning of the Page of Wands, saying, okay, announcements, but here, this specifically says it's an invitation, it's a clarion call, it's an announcement, it's somebody speaking out, versus the Rider-Waite, which is a little bit more ambiguous. It could be somebody examining themselves or examining their situation, because if you look at the card, I know it's common to say, well, he's holding up like he's making an announcement. No, he's holding up and looking at it. There's no guarantee that he's about to make an announcement. And if we were to follow that logic, then we'd have to follow it through to all of the other pages. And if you see that, it doesn't quite follow through. Hey, look, back to the Seven of Cups. Now here in this particular deck, the Hanson Roberts, we have Gandalf the Wizard, or not Voldemort, but Dumbledore, or whoever your friendly wizard du jour is. And he's got an octopus in a cup, and a rainbow, and a dragon, and a sylph, and some stars, frosted lucky charms. All of this is like he's presenting something to us. Here are your choices. Again, this is him coming down from an authoritarian point of view, versus, we just happen to run across a treasure trove. Ten of Swords is a lot like the Rider-Waite, but we don't have the mark of benediction. He's not doing the thing with his fingers. That's the, I kind of hinted at this in the book. That's the secret mark where the person has said, so-and-so did this to me. It's the subtleties in the images that give you all the details. And they're not always necessary or appropriate. So I don't want you to think that you have to study every card and scrub it for meaning. The voice in your head, your spirit guides, the gods, whatever you want to call it, they will guide you and tell you what's important at this particular time. Three of Pentacles, again, nobody's bothering him. All these are for the Hanson Roberts. So we lose the fact that that somebody could be interrupting your work. Six of Swords, this man is going by himself, so it's no longer a trip with his family, it's no longer a refugee, it's just a man on a boat, indicating you could be taking a trip. Well, you have travel over air, or travel through air, by air, with the Wands, Eight of Wands. You have travel over land with the Eight of Cups, travel over water, the Six of Swords. That's all nice, but we lose the whole refugee thing, or the possibility of being a taxi or a chauffeur that we have with the Rider-Waite by having passengers. Knight of Pentacles, it's nice enough close, but we don't see that he's sitting there, so we don't have the we just kind of lose some of the excess symbolism. So rather than going on again and again, I think I've made my point here. Art changes the deck. this can be good, this can be bad, it doesn't matter. If you find that you are not able to read with a particular deck, it's a matter of the art isn't speaking to you. Maybe it's pretty. You know, there's a lot of really pretty decks. I've owned several Salvador Dali decks, and I've given them all away. Three of them. I've given all three of them away. $120 a deck. This is a bad habit. And I so wanted to read with them. I loved them. They had nice gold gilded edges. But it was an art deck. It wasn't a working deck. Working deck is your bread and butter. That's the deck you pick up, you use, you give amazing answers with. People come back and they tell their friends. They think you're wonderful. They give you tips. They tell you great things about yourself. I mean, that's pretty nice. That all comes with your working deck. Your art deck is something you put on the wall. Or you leave it in a box and you take that out every once in a while. I don't like leaving my decks in the boxes because they might as well be in the garage. If I don't see them, I don't touch them, I don't play with them, they're not really part of my life. They might as well be sitting somewhere else. You may choose differently. So, your tarot deck can have any pictures on it and make complete sense as long as the system that you're using is whole and complete and it encompasses everything that can happen in life. That's what it comes down to. If you ever want to design your own tarot deck, you can do that. I mean, thousands of people have, actually millions of people have, because we have at least 1,000 decks that have been published, and infinite numbers of people who've just made their own tarot deck and it's never been published, but you know, for their own use. So you can definitely make your own deck, but if you change the art, make sure it maintains the balance of the deck, because if you take out a meaning, and like if you don't have a Six of Wands, well, how are you going to express the Six of Wands? How are the gods going to express that energy if you say, well, I don't want that energy? You know, how are you going to describe that situation? Do you have to use two or three cards now to kind of get back in the same place? And you don't want to have two or three cards that mean the same thing, because then you have repetition, and again, the structure of the deck is wrong. If you have any questions on this, just email me. I hope I'm making sense. This is where bibliomancy comes in, by the way. The Bible has long been used as a source of divination. Boy, wait till the Christians find that out. Matter of fact, they're the ones who've been doing it, but wait till the other Christians find out. They do divination too. It's right there. Now, here's how it works. And you can use this with a dictionary. You can use Harry Potter, you know, any decent book. But it started with the Bible because that was, you know, Gutenberg's thing, and everybody had a Bible, so it was the book that you happen to have. But you crack open a book and you read a passage based on the question that you're asking. Ask your question, crack open the book, close your eyes, point to a passage, read that passage. Try to find the inherent wisdom in that passage as it relates to your question. The Bible works really well because everything's like Leviticus 17, you know, little short snippets. You can just read Leviticus. I can't say Leviticus. I apologize. Matthew. You can't say Matthew 17. You can say Matthew 17. You know, you can read Matthew 17 and through Matthew 18. But you don't get stuck like with Harry Potter. You end up reading the whole book and go, not only did I get distracted, but where did I make the chop-off point or the ending point and say, this is the summation of my wisdom. But it definitely, poof, there's your answer. Now, the same holds true for astrology or the tarot. You ask your question, you pull out the information, you read the information at hand, and it is just so important that you compare whatever you get to the situation at hand. Don't make reality fit the tarot. I'll pull a card here. Nine of Coins. Don't make reality fit the Nine of Coins. Nine of Coins has to answer the existing situation. If the Nine of Coins cannot answer the existing situation, ask yourself, is this card talking to me at all? Or am I forcing myself to say, well, the Nine of Coins means financial independence or being taken care of, or you're going to have a house and a winery. I mean, do you have set meanings on that? or are you allowed to, have you allowed yourself to look through the catalog of information in your mind on what that card means, and allow the voices, or your muses, or your spirit guides, again, choose your favorite term, to guide you to the right answer. And we don't want vague answers. We want very specific answers. So that's why what we talked about today is a very small part of this. So don't take what I've said today and then run around giving vague answers. Apply it to everything else. I've been talking a long time. I thank you very much for listening to me. If you've never heard this before, I am Dusty White, the author of The Easiest Way to Learn the Tarot Ever. I'm currently working on The Easiest Way to Learn Astrology Ever. I invite you to please, please take the free lessons at easytarotlessons.com. We have the podcast, we have written lessons, a blog, interviews with some of the top experts in the world. You can find The Easiest Way to Learn the Tarot Ever on Amazon. It's one of the best ranked books ever written on the tarot. Yay! Thank you. I'm just very lucky that way. And if you have questions on the tarot, email me or go to advancedtarotsecrets.com. We have some forums there. If you want to write forums.advancedtarotsecrets.com, you can go there. Register. That's free. I'll sign you up. Post your questions. Like I said, email me at dustywhite.net. I care about you getting this right, mastering it. If you like it, buy the damn book. Help me pay the rent. If you don't, well, listen to the podcast anyway. Maybe you'll like it. But it's not about the money. It is about making sure that you get this. And that's why I do this podcast. And I hope it's been a service to you. Again, apologize for the quality. But it's free. All right, I'm going to turn this off now. Thanks, bye.